Welcome to Earth Matters on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU, at 89.1 FM, the show that brings you in-depth coverage of local, regional, and national environmental issues. I'm Donna Stevens, the Executive Director of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, a local watershed protection nonprofit, and I'm your host for today's program. On today's show, we're going to talk about some issues impacting sportsmen, hunters, and fishers, as well as everybody else who cares about the outdoors. Joining me here in the studio is John Cornell, a sportsman's organizer with the New Mexico Wildlife Federation. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Yeah, you had to come all the way come to the big metropolis of Silver City to be on this show today.
Well, it's, you know, you can go two ways. You can go over the hills, you can come around the flats, and it still takes about the same time from Lake Valley where I live.
Yeah, kind of out in the middle of nowhere there.
That's the way we like it.
That is the way we like it. So there's several issues we're going to talk about today. And I thought we would start with the state land access fee, because this might not be familiar to a lot of our listeners. So in the New Mexico Wildlife Federation Fall 2015 newsletter, I read an article about how the New Mexico State Lands Commissioner is raising fees for hunting on state lands. Can you please summarize this issue for us?
Sure. A little history. Previous land commissioners have negotiated leases with New Mexico Department of Game and Fish. These leases allow access to sportsmen for hunting seasons and some days before to scout. So the department has been paying about $200,000 a year. Now, previous land commissioners have realized that the department offers a lot of in-kind services. And so that may seem like a low dollar amount to access over 8 million acres of lands that we can hunt and fish on. But previous land commissioners have realized the in-kind services that the Department of Game and Fish provides, such as law enforcement. Actually, even some habitat improvement has been done on state trust lands. So it's not just us going in there and utilizing the areas for hunting, but we have provided more services. So when the new land commissioner, Aubrey Dunn, was evaluating the renewal of this lease, and these leases have been lease periods of from 1 year up to 3 years, and when he looked at it, he thought that, well, that dollar amount is too low for what the sportsmen are getting. And he probably was right. That was probably too low. So the department came back and said, okay, we'll offer you, say, $600,000 a year over a three-year period, which we thought that was a substantial increase and it would be fair. And Mr. Dunn turned it down and said, no, I think it's worth more than that. So he did some appraisals and he came up with a figure. Well, actually, it ended up being $1 million for 1 year. And we wanted to sign a long-term lease, obviously, a three-year lease, but they decided, the Game Commission, that they would settle for $1 million a year, which that is a 400% increase from what we were paying. So sportsmen, obviously, there was a lot of outcry, including from the New Mexico Wildlife Federation. We actually thought that they should not sign the lease, which would have had serious implications. Actually, it would have stopped all hunting on state trust lands, which would have a great impact. Nobody wanted to see that, but we cannot be held hostage for using these lands because who knows what the dollar amount will be from now on. We still have to negotiate these leases from year to year. He's already talking about $5 million, and those, quite frankly, are increases that we can't absorb. $1 million a year, you know, we've got the budget, and sportsmen pay their own ways. We get no funding from the general fund from the state. All the money that goes into the Game Protection Fund comes from sportsmen's dollars, from hunting and fishing licenses. We get some funding from some federal funds, but the majority of all of it comes from sportsmen. So we don't have unlimited funding. So if these state trust land lease fees go up more than, let's say, where we're at $1 million a year, then we have no choice but to raise hunting and license fees to all the sportsmen in New Mexico because we can't absorb tremendous increases. You know, it's the state land office is mandated to raise funds for school children and hospitals. And we certainly support that. That's a worthy cause, and we want to help the school children. But it appears that Commissioner Dunn is picking on one user group, and that's the sportsmen. Oil and gas is the biggest revenue producer for the state land office in New Mexico. It produces about 95% of their revenue. Grazing permits, you know, they also are a substantial part, much more than what the sportsmen pay. So if you really want to make an impact in New Mexico as far as raising funds for universities and school children, we're just a small part of it. We can't, you know, make a big impact. Grazing fees did go up 25%, but he didn't raise grazing fees 400%.
Right.
Can you imagine the outcry in the state if he attempted to do that? So why would you raise our fees 400% and you didn't do that to the other user groups? You know, we have the least impact on the land. We're just out there maybe 5 days out of the year. Obviously, we know what oil and gas can do. And so we felt like we were picked on. And we mm-hmm. thought it was unfair.
Did he raise the fees for oil and gas?
Not that I'm aware of.
Huh.
I'm not aware of that he's raised the leasing fees or royalty fees for oil and gas.
Well, and if they pay 95% of the fees, even a small increase could be a lot of money, right?
It would be substantial. If he was sincere about really doing what was best for school children and universities, those are the areas where you're going to make a significant, you know, impact by raising the fees on oil and gas. Primarily oil and gas. It's the
right.
Yeah,
So the fees went from $200,000 to $1 million per year.
That's correct.
For the privilege of hunting on state land, which is our public land.
Correct.
And so did the hunting license fees go up this year, or will that happen next year?
You know, fortunately, there is a fund called Pittman-Robertson, and that's a federal fund that is collected from taxes from when you buy firearms or ammunition. Those funds are gathered and collected all over, and then they're divided among the states. They go to the Game and Fish Department. So those sales have been good. So we're healthy. We are healthy right now. The Department of Game and Fish, in fact, we can't spend all the money that we have in our budget because the governor has everybody on kind of a zero budget because of some shortfalls in the state. So it impacts us. Even though we have the funds to spend and hire, we can't do it because that money is tied up. So,
and is we the New Mexico Department of Game
yes,
and Fish?
Yes.
Okay.
So we're healthy now, and we can absorb $1 million a year. But Commissioner Dunn's talking about $5 million or maybe more. If that happens, then no, we can't absorb those kind of increases.
Yeah, that's pretty substantial. Why do you think he's what's his motivation here? Do you know?
I don't know. Can you speculate on that? You know, we're not bad people.
Right?
You know, sportsmen are, you know, we're hardworking, you know, folks, and we, you know, contribute to the economy in New Mexico. And like I say, we're low impact on the land. Mm-hmm. We're out there maybe, you know, our hunting seasons maybe run 5 days, and maybe we do a little scouting. We can't camp on state trust lands.
Huh.
People don't realize that that's a policy right now. We don't have camping rights on state trust lands. You have to get permission from the land commissioner or the permittee to be able to camp on our state trust lands.
And so, can you get it? I mean, how difficult is that?
If you ask the rancher, maybe, maybe not. I would say in most cases, probably not.
Huh. So when you hunt on state land as opposed to, say, national forest land, you can just be there during the day, but you can't camp.
That's correct, and you can only go in during certain hours. You can't come in during the night mm-hmm. to get in early. So you have to go in and get out. So, and with our new lease agreement increase from 400%, we tried to negotiate some more rights, including camping. I think we got a few additional camp areas opened up, but we certainly didn't get camping on all the state trust lands.
So this is obviously an issue for people who hunt, but what about the rest of the public who doesn't hunt? Why should we care?
Well, we're all public land users. If you're an outdoor recreationist, if you're a birder, a hiker, a camper, we all, you know, value our public lands. Now, the state land office, you can't access the state trust lands unless you have a hunting license in a hunting season, but they do sell an access permit. And I don't think most people in the state of New Mexico understand or realize that. For $25, you can purchase a state trust land access, and it allows you to access state trust lands for any reason year-round, hiking, birding, horseback riding, but you still can't camp on it. But you can. The general public can access this anytime. Now, you can't always access by roads. That access stipulates, maybe by foot, maybe by horseback, but it doesn't guarantee access by roads.
Mm-hmm. And did you say earlier that there's 8 million acres of state land?
8 million plus, yeah.
Okay.
That we can use for hunting.
Yeah, so that's pretty substantial.
Well, it is. I mean, 90% of sportsmen in New Mexico hunt on public lands. We can't afford to pay to hunt on private lands like they do in Texas. So without public lands, we don't have any place to hunt and fish.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the whole public lands thing, because there was also an article about that in your fall of 2015 newsletter, and that was about transferring federal land to the state. So can you tell us what that issue is all about?
Well, it's known as the Sagebrush Rebellion. This is nothing new. Actually, it goes back to when Theodore Roosevelt was protecting public lands and he enacted the Antiquities Act. There were folks then that didn't think that, you know, the federal government would, but the people. See, that's a misconception. The federal government doesn't own these public lands. They're managed by them for the people. We own all the public lands. So this movement to transfer national public lands to the state is nothing new. It goes all the way back 100 plus years, and it pops up every 10 or 15 years. There'll be some folks from some Western congressmen and county commissioners and local electeds that think, well, you know, let's bring this up again. Let's see if we can get any kind of traction and any kind of support for transferring these lands back to the states, because we can do such a better job because the federal government can't. Well, we realize that the states can't do a better job. States can't afford to manage the lands that they already have, and they certainly can't afford to manage any more lands. And if they can't manage them, what happens when you go upside down on a loan? Anybody does. Well, you have no choice but to liquidate those and sell them off to private interests. So these things pop up. They'll go to the courts or legal experts. They'll get an opinion that says, okay, you know what? You can't do this. It's against the Constitution. It's against the Enabling Act. You know, you're going to spend a lot of money in the courts, and you're going to get nowhere, and you're going to cost your states a whole lot of money, and it fades away. And that's kind of the way it's always done, except it can be done congressionally in D.C., and that has become a serious threat because actually the Republicans support this. And we have a Republican-controlled Congress. We have in the Senate and the House both. And if you get, you know, the right or those of us that are in the conservation business, maybe the wrong president, right, this could actually, believe it or not, this could actually happen.
Well, why would Congress want to do that?
That's a good question, because it certainly wouldn't be supported by the majority. You know, if you are supporting private interests and privatization of these public lands for development and exploitation, then that's why you'd want to do it.
Well, I think, John, this is a good point for you to tell us about your public lands rally that's coming up on January 21st.
We are sponsoring this rally, and it's this Thursday, and it's going to be at the State Roundhouse. The session,
that's January 21st.
That's
for
correct.
People who are listening
yeah.
to this later in the week.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have gotten the word out a little earlier, but yeah, it's January 21st. Our legislative session starts today.
Right.
So they're
January
all,
19th.
That's right. They're all gathering at the Roundhouse for a 30-day budget session. And we've got the rotunda in the Roundhouse reserved for an hour on the 21st.
Time does it start?
It starts at 2 o'clock.
Okay.
2 o'clock, and it'll run till 3. We did this last year, and we had about 350 to 400 folks turn out. And you know, obviously, you know, a lot of sportsmen, but not just sportsmen. This is for anybody that loves to recreate on our public lands. Any and all outdoor enthusiasts, you know, are welcome to come, and they showed up last year. And we sent a message to the fourth floor, which is where Governor Susana Martinez
That's her
hangs
hangout.
Her shingle. Yeah, right. That's her hangout. And we have guest speakers that, you know, come up there. We have children, young people come up and talk about how important hunting is to them on public lands. We have women. We may even have some elected folks. And so we get a good variety and diversity of folks coming up there. And we just make a lot of noise in support of public lands, and it echoes throughout the Roundhouse. So
yeah,
everybody,
literally,
and everybody's getting the message. We're open for 800 or more folks this year.
That's great.
And it looks like it might happen. So we may have overflow outside.
Okay, good. Well, we're going to talk about that some more after we come back from this break, so please stay with us here on Earth Matters. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. I'm Donna Stevens, your host for today's program. And joining me here in the studio is John Cornell. He is with the New Mexico Wildlife Federation, and we're talking about all kinds of public lands issues. If you're just joining us, right before the break, we were talking about transferring public lands from the feds to the state and why that is such a bad idea. And I wanted to ask you, John, why you guys oppose this transfer of federal lands to the state?
Well, I think a good example is what we just talked about earlier, is the state land office and paying access fees for the access of over 8 million acres. Well, if the national public lands were transferred to the state land office, that would be an additional 30 million acres. Can you imagine if the land commissioner controlled all the public lands? If he wants $1 million a year for 8+ million, what would he want for 38 million?
And doesn't the state land commissioner, doesn't he also have the authority to sell off land without asking anyone else about it, getting permission from anyone?
That is correct. And one of the biggest differences between state trust lands and Forest Service and BLM lands is state trust lands are managed more like private lands, and the mandate is to raise money for school children and universities through development. So, yes, they are more open to development and less restrictions, environmental restrictions. They don't have the requirements for NEPA and environmental impacts that the national public lands do. So those can be developed a lot less or a lot more easier than the other lands can. So,
is that what you think is really behind all of this?
I think it is, yes. I think the ultimate end game is to privatize these public lands for private interests, yes, to profit and to benefit private interests.
So some of the people who support this transfer are people who are anti-Fed, but these are also the same people who use the national forest.
That's true.
So I don't quite understand where they think they're going to hunt, fish, ride their ATVs, hike, et cetera.
Well, where are they going to, you know, graze their cattle? They're, you know, that's an important user group.
Right.
And we support grazing cattle, and they're doing it on these federal public lands. And if these lands are turned over to the state, first of all, we know that they're paying leasing fees to the state land office. It was raised 25%, like I said earlier. It's now up to, I think, $4.85. The BLM charges for the same $1.35. So if they go from the state, from national public lands to state, well, their grazing fees are going to be increased tremendously right off the bat. And if these lands are put up to be, let's say, sold to the highest bidder because the state can't afford to manage them, you know, how many of the hardworking ranchers that are already out there working on very, very low margins? These are small families and small businesses, and they're just making it and just getting by. You know, how are they going to afford to buy these lands? And they're going to lose the lands where they are raising their cattle on now. So they actually stand to lose as much as any of us, maybe even more so.
But aren't some of these the same people who support transferring their land to the state because they don't like the federal government?
Yes. And it's perplexing. I don't understand it. You know, how can we get so wrapped up in an ideology that we, you know, actually don't see the forest for the trees?
Bite the hand that feeds
that's
you.
That's exactly right.
Right.
I know.
I wanted to ask about some other issues that New Mexico Wildlife Federation works on. I know that you work to ensure access to public lands. We're just talking about that. What are some of the other ways that you try to protect public lands for the use of all Americans?
You know, we support, you know, our mission is more hunting opportunity and better hunting opportunity for New Mexico residents. We support protecting and enhancing habitat. We're big on access, you know, reasonable access to our public lands. Access is the number one issue for sportsmen all across the West. If we don't have access to public lands, we don't have a place where we can hunt and fish.
Mm-hmm.
And it's becoming more and more of an issue. And we support education and getting more young people involved, not only in hunting and fishing, but, you know, in anything outdoors, you know, family in the woods. Or so we support those things are our main mission.
Okay. I know that last week you issued a press release about supporting a coal mining moratorium on public lands. Can you tell us about that?
Right. President Obama has just issued an executive order that has banned new coal permits and renewing coal permits on public lands, which this is a very, very big deal. And of course, the idea is to promote more renewable energy. Coal burning plants, even though that has provided low cost energy, we've paid a high cost in the environment and health issues. I think coal-burning plants in communities adjacent to them, I think there's been a lot of health issues. And we certainly know what mining of any kind can do to the environment. And coal mining is very, very invasive and very destructive. So the people that support it say, well, what about low-cost energy? Aren't you hurting all Americans? Well, if you look at the cost of what this has done to the environment and to health costs, actually, it's not a fair comparison to say that it's low cost of energy. When you look at these impacts to society, it's probably been tremendous costs because of what it's done to the environment and what it's done to our health. And we all know what those issues cost. So by forcing or actually supporting more renewable energy, this will cause renewable energy costs to go down because as we have more and more wind farms and solar farms come online, obviously the cost of generating that power is going to go down. We've already seen costs go way down to where they're even close to what we're producing with coal now. So we've narrowed that gap tremendously, and we can get it down to even to what we're paying now for coal for energy. So this is a win-win for all of us. We don't have all the environmental impacts. Now, renewable energy is not, it has issues of its own. It doesn't come with some environmental issues and impacts. We have to be, I call it smart from the start. So we have to site these renewable energy fields in the right place, put them in places where maybe the resource value isn't as high as some other areas, and we have to mediate the impacts from renewable energy because it does cause some impacts on the ground. So, you know, if we do it smartly, renewable energy, then we're really ahead of the game, and we'll end up having clean, low cost, low impact energy development.
So in preparing a little bit for this interview this morning, I was kind of surprised that the New Mexico Wildlife Federation gets involved in mining issues. I didn't know you did that.
We anything that has an impact on wildlife habitat, we tend to get involved with, and hard rock mining certainly does that. We also have been involved and this goes back to when Senators Bingaman and Udall introduced legislation to reform the General Mining Act of 1872. We were big supporters of that because that's an outdated law. Certainly, how can you even fathom a law from 1872 still being on the books?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all.
I mean, didn't we have laws back then where, I don't know, you can't spit on the sidewalk or chew, right? I don't know what, but it's just hard to believe that law, and you know, we're still paying the consequences for it. You know, we support hard rock mining, responsible hard rock mining again, but that industry has had it so well for so long. I mean, they don't even pay a royalty. They don't even pay any fees to mine on our public lands. They file low-cost permits. It doesn't cost a buck for a filing claim. But they don't, oil and gas at least pays, a good percentage of leasing fees and royalties. Hard rock mining doesn't pay anything.
And they've been doing this on our national forests, they don't pay anything?
On our public lands, they pay a minimum lease or permitting fee. And that's it. And most of the mining companies these days are foreign owned. So a China owned mining company can come in, stake claims on our public lands and mine for gold and copper and silver and rare earth, and put some money back in the local economies, but they can take a lot of that money back to their countries.
Right. And if they go bankrupt while they're mining, then they might not have the money to clean up their mess.
That's why we have a probably, I don't know, 50,000 plus abandoned mines in the West.
Mm-hmm. Superfund sites
that the taxpayers are paying for.
Right.
Because the General Mining Act of 1872, first of all, you know, the environment wasn't a concern.
Right.
Back then it was, you know, how do we get the populated East folks to migrate to the West?
Mm-hmm.
And this was an incentive to do that, to give them something, a reason to come here where they could make a living. So there are no environmental concerns basically in the law. Nothing to do with paying back the federal government for the use of the lands. And there was nothing in there as far as reassurances for environmental disasters or for, like you say, you know, just going bankrupt and leaving it like it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have bonding requirements now, financial assurances that the mining companies have to put up in case there is some kind of an environmental disaster, but they're not enough to take care of a problem if it happens. And I think statistics show that 70% of hard rock mines at some point or another fail or have some kind of an environmental issue. And the bonding that they're required to put up is just not enough to cover all those costs of reclamation and cleanup.
Well, that seems like a good stopping point, and so we're going to take a little break here, and we'll be right back with Earth Matters. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Donna Stevens, your host for today's program. If you're just joining us, my guest here today is John Cornell, and he's the sportsman's organizer for the New Mexico Wildlife Federation. So I don't hunt and I don't fish, and I'm sorry. That's just not my thing. But I enjoy the public lands, of course, because I don't have enough money to have loads of land of my own. And I'm always kind of surprised at how much I have in common with the New Mexico Wildlife Federation. So when I first got your newsletter years ago, I thought, why am I getting this newsletter? I don't hunt or fish. But then when I took a look at it, I saw that there are things that we have in common. So we were talking before the break about the public lands transfer, which sounds benign, but is, you know, not actually. Transferring lands from the feds to the state, and which I think is a really terrible idea, and so do you guys. And many conservation issues, like you were saying before the break, anything that impacts wildlife habitat is something you're concerned about, and so am I. So we do have a lot in common. So can you tell us, for people who just joined, can you tell us again about this rally that you're holding on January 21st?
Well, yes. And I'd like to maybe even talk a little bit more about this transfer scenario, because I think, you know, when you look at it, in the proponents of this are saying, okay, why should New Mexico share profits from oil and gas on public lands? If we can control these and transfer them to the state, wouldn't we benefit? Wouldn't we get all the money from those lands? And that's what they're saying. The reason they support this is they're saying, okay, well, right now I think, you know, we probably get a 50-50 split from oil and gas revenues or whatever it may be on national public lands. And, you know, the proponents say, okay, well, we could benefit. The state would benefit that much more if we got all that money from those lands.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the fact of the matter is it costs hundreds of millions of dollars for the BLM and the Forest Service to manage those lands. So you have management costs involved. It's not like you just generate revenue and profit from those lands. You have to put money back into it to manage these programs, to manage the lands. There's a lot involved in managing oil and gas and issuing permits and the personnel that need to do that. So it's not as simple as just saying that we will get the money that the feds are keeping. It's not that simple. You have to spend money to make money.
Right.
If you have wildfires,
mm-hmm.
you know, we've had a lot of catastrophic wildfires in the state in the last several years due to drought conditions and climate change and various factors. Well, right now, the state of New Mexico is not paying to fight those fires. The federal
right.
government's paying to fight those fires. If
yeah.
we own those lands, guess who has to pay for that? We all have to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
And those fires can run hundreds of millions of dollars. Right now, the cost of that is actually being shared by everybody in the country that owns all these federal lands, whether we have a fire here or a fire in Wyoming or a fire in California. we're all sharing those costs all over the country because we all are owners of these lands.
Right.
But if the state would assume management of all these lands, then the state, and meaning the residents of the state, are responsible for paying for fighting those fires. And we just, and there's, like I say, hundreds of millions of dollars. I live right close to where the Gila, and we had the Silver Fire here 2 or 3 years ago, and I could sit on my front porch and watch that fire flaming. And I think the cost of that fire was maybe $120, $130 million. And that's just one fire. And we know we've had many, many fires. We've all heard about them. So we'd have to absorb the cost of that. We talked about abandoned mines. I think New Mexico has maybe 15,000. The last I heard,
abandoned mines.
Yes, have been inventoried in the state.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, those are all public lands, national public lands. Right now, any funding that comes to help with that comes through the federal government. What if we own those lands and now we have to reclaim those mining sites? Well, we pay for that.
And we have a small population here in New Mexico, but if we're getting federal funding, it comes from what? 320 million Americans.
That's correct. We've got, what, 2 million?
Yeah.
I think we've got 2 million in the state of New Mexico.
Something like that.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we can't absorb those kinds of costs to manage those lands. And so what happens if you are in control of something that you can't afford to pay for? Well, you can't afford to keep it.
Right. Exactly.
And so you have to dispose of it. And then you have to sell it to the highest bidder, and that's not going to be you and I and most New Mexicans.
No. And then if you look at some of the people behind some of these groups that want to transfer public federal land to the states, you have, like, for instance, the American Legislative Exchange Council, more commonly known as ALEC. And, I mean, these guys are pretty slick. In the American Lands Council, a couple of years ago I went to see a guy from the American Lands Council speak in Deming, just kind of out of interest to see what they would say. And
was that Ken Ivory?
It was, yes.
And I think it was one of our state legislators that was part of that. I think I was invited.
I think
I
it was
go.
The meeting was partly sponsored by the Southwest County Commission Alliance.
Right. Okay, I'm aware of that group.
Yes.
We're not in, you know, we're out of alignment with their, what they support.
Right.
Weren't they involved in the travel management plan?
They were involved in travel management,
right.
And we were definitely on opposing sides on that issue.
We were definitely. The sportsmen were, too. We supported that travel management plan. We think it's responsible. You know, we have 5,000 miles. We cut it down to 3,000 miles. 3,000 miles is still a lot of miles in the Gila, okay, for roads.
It's a lot of miles.
Yeah.
I figured out that it was enough miles to drive from San Diego to Maine. I don't know what their problem was.
I did an op-ed or an LTE, and I figured it from Albuquerque to Pittsburgh or something.
Okay.
Back. Yeah. Well, close. Yeah, close.
It's a lot of roads.
It's a lot of roads.
And I also figured out, I can't remember exactly now, but I figured out how long it would take you to drive those roads if you went at, say, 20 miles an hour, because most of them are
pretty fast for those roads in
right,
the Gila.
Exactly.
Yeah, 20 miles an hour.
It would take you several days to travel them all, assuming that you didn't have to backtrack. So a little hard to know what the issue was all about there, but
so I think
it's all ideological.
It is. So I think Mr. Ivory was here. Part of the support for his organizations, I guess he goes to the western counties to raise money, I guess, to get them to contribute to his mission.
Yeah.
And so,
well, he works. I mean, that's his job, right? He works for the American Lands Council, and he's also, or was, I'm not sure, a representative from Utah.
I think he still is.
Is he still? Okay.
Yeah, but he is paid, I think, quite well by his ALEC. So anyway, he pitches to these counties to fund his organization on behalf of trying to, I guess, you know, there's even some counties, Donna, that want to own and manage them lands themselves, even beyond the state. Some counties think that they could do a better job of managing these public lands.
So, yeah, I'm skeptical, to say the least.
Well, they, you know, again, where's the budget? Where's the money going to come from?
Exactly.
Whether you're a county or the state, where are you going to have the funds to be able to manage these lands that the federal government is now, you know, putting up? We can't do it. We just simply cannot do it. And that brings up another source of funding, PILT. payment in lieu of taxes. You know, each of our counties receives a PILT amount of funding every year. Sometimes it can be $2 or $3 million, maybe more. I would venture to say, you know, it's based on the amount of public lands that's in your county. Mm-hmm. Probably Catron County and some of these counties that have a lot of public lands, I would imagine some of their PILT funding. And even Otero County that has a lot of public lands, it's a substantial amount of money. Well, if you transfer these lands to the state, that's done.
Yeah.
PILT funds are over with. None of these counties will receive any more PILT funds under a transfer scenario.
That's right.
And they cannot operate. Their budgets cannot operate without that PILT funding.
Mm-hmm. Well, and speaking of funding, there's an issue we've talked about many times on this radio show, and that is a diversion on the Gila River. Where does your group, New Mexico Wildlife Federation, stand on that issue?
We're totally against it.
Why?
Several reasons. First of all, it won't work. You know, I've been to many, many meetings, and I'm sure in this community it's been talked about a bunch. It's a hot topic. And we all know, or at least heard of Norm Guam, who was the director of the Interstate Stream Commission.
Right.
And, you know, he's an engineer. And he's an expert, I would say the foremost expert. And other experts have also voiced their opinions and studied it, looked at it. And first of all, it won't hold water. You know, their plan will not hold water. We don't get enough of rainfall, even in the good years, that we're going to be able to capture water. If we do try and dam it up and divert it, you know, with seepage and evaporation, we're still not going to achieve the 14,000 acre feet that we're allowed to divert. And then you look at the cost of the diversion, which could run in the neighborhood of $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And probably that's conservative, because we know once you get on the ground and start constructing these things, and the Bureau of Reclamation will be the first one to say it, it goes way up. It goes way up from initial costs, because you find things out there that you know don't know you're going to run into in construction costs. And anyway, it ends up being way more than $1 billion. Well, if we can't, you know, there's another boondoggle. How are we going to pay for that?
Right.
How are local communities going to pay for that? You know, how is the town of Deming, which is a big proponent of this because they say they don't have enough water for growth or for the future, which studies show they do. You know, I've seen plenty of studies that show that there's plenty of groundwater that will last Deming for, you know, for as long as they will actually need it and for development. And how are we going to get the water to Deming? If we diverted that water and piped it to Deming, right now Deming residents are paying an average of $17 a month for their water. Their water bills would go up to $170 a month. That
wow.
would be the increase for the cost of the diversion and piping the water to Deming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know how many folks in Deming can afford that kind of an increase. I know I couldn't or wouldn't want to. And it's for something that, you know, the water, it may never happen anyway. So, yeah, we're against it. And then not only the cost of it, you know, sportsmen are taxpayers too. You know, we don't want to throw away our tax dollars. But you look at the environmental impact and what it would do to habitat. You know, the Gila is a tremendous resource for us and a playground for us. We love the Gila. Not only do we hunt big game in there, but we fish. You know, we can hunt turkeys. It's got world-class elk hunting. There's even a herd of a bighorn sheep in there. And can you imagine the impact on that habitat and something at this scale? Well, it you know, it would never recover. We'd lose that habitat forever. And we'd lose, you know, the great hunting and fishing in there, which is a huge, huge revenue generator for these rural counties.
Mm-hmm. So you were talking earlier in the show about this public lands rally that you're having on January 21st. And that's it would be the third day of the legislative session. And are there any bills coming up, do you think, in this session that will impact the outdoors?
You know, we've been tracking this closely, of course, because we are very active at the legislature in representing sportsmen in New Mexico. So far, we have not seen anything that's been filed for this session that's going to have anything to do with a transfer. We do have Senator Bill Soles from Las Cruces, who's a huge champion for conservation in New Mexico, has filed a memorial that's supporting public lands. So right now it looks like we've got one good thing to fight for and no bad things yet. So we're hoping it's a quiet session, and it looks like it probably will be. So,
right, but today is only day one.
Today is only day one, and you know how they are. They like to have these things in their pocket drafted, and then they can just file them. I think they have a certain period of time that they can actually file these things. And the governor can call on anything that she chooses, and we don't anticipate her doing anything like that, but she could.
She could. And this morning, I think today, January 19th, was her State of the State address, which we are probably missing right now as we sit here in the radio station.
Oh, darn.
Oh, darn is right. We can say, oh, darn, on the radio.
Yeah, good.
Well, we're going to come right back after this short break. I'll be talking with John Cornell of New Mexico Wildlife Federation, so please stay with us. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Donna Stevens, your host for today's show. If you're just joining us, or even if you're not, I am talking with John Cornell of the New Mexico Wildlife Federation. And right before the break, we were talking a little bit about the New Mexico legislative session, which starts today, January 19th, as we're recording this show. And this is the short session. So in other words, it's only 30 days long instead of 60. So the sessions alternate. Every other year is a short session. So during the short sessions, they mostly handle budget issues. And you were saying, John, that Senator Bill Soles from Las Cruces has a memorial about supporting public land.
That's correct. Normally, we're on the defensive,
right,
at the legislature and fighting for public lands. And this is something that's proactive. So we don't know what kind of support it'll get, but that's one thing that the listeners certainly can do. You know, we encourage everyone to be involved with your legislature and your state representatives, state senators. Don't be shy about contacting them about what's important to you. If we don't let our voices be heard, then, you know, how do we expect for them to represent us? And, you know, what we like to say, everybody says, don't complain if you're not going to step up and do something about it and be silent. So we need folks in the conservation community to step up. Call your state legislatures. They'll answer the phone or somebody will take a message. And you can leave a message about, you know, what you support or what you don't support. You know, drop by their offices, either their local office. You know, they're not going to be around much the next 30 days, but they do take some breaks and they do come home for the weekends. Basically, they do most of their work Tuesdays through Thursdays. Mondays and Fridays are kind of travel days. So it's important that we all step up and, you know, especially at the grassroots level and be involved, because, you know, if we're not involved, we're going to get overrun by the folks that don't like what we stand for. And, you know, what we do is too important. We have too much to lose, especially when it comes to these public lands. So we encourage everybody to, you know, if you can get to Santa Fe. You know, Santa Fe is a nice place.
It's a nice place.
It's a nice place. It's a good place to visit and then come home.
Exactly.
And right. You know, there's a lot to see and a lot to learn, and the whole process, legislative process, is fascinating. And, you know, we like to encourage sportsmen and anybody else, you know, if you need our help, you know, we'll go up there with you. We'll kind of show you the ropes. We'll show you how you can get the attention of your legislature and some of the techniques on how to do it. In fact, for our rally that's coming up Thursday, if we can get carpools or enough folks interested in going, we'll actually handle transportation. We'll cover the cost for that. This is that important to us, that to get bodies up there, people up there. And we will do anything we can to help folks, even coming from Silver City in this area. We know it's a long trip. Man, that's a long drive. I mean, that's all day. You know, even from Las Cruces and the areas over there closer to where I live, that's a long trip. And people can't afford, first of all, to take time out of their busy lives. We're all working. And then the expense. And we certainly wouldn't expect folks to, if you can cover the cost, that's great. That's fine. But we want to help. We want to get you there. We want to show you the process. And I think you'll have a lot of fun kind of learning how things work up there. Or you'll get angry, one or the other.
Or both.
Right. But if we're not involved, we're losing.
So how would people get a hold of you if they're interested in traveling up for the January 21st rally?
We have a website. It's nmwildlife.org. And our phone number in Albuquerque is 505-299-5404. 505-299-5404. Call, and whoever answers the phone, say, you know, say your name and say, I live here, and I want to come to the rally. You know, I want to participate. I want to be involved, and I need help with transportation. And we'll make arrangements. We'll find somebody else that's coming, a carpool. We'll rent a van. We'll rent a car. We'll rent a bus. If we can fill a bus, we'll get you there in a busload. It's that important. So please let us know how we can help.
We've had some traveling parties going from Silver City up to Santa Fe in the last couple of years, and it's fun. If you're going with a group of people, it's really fun, and you do get to learn about what's going on in the roundhouse. And it is pretty fascinating, actually, to see how it works or doesn't, as the case may be.
So, it's crazy. Well, I mean, it can be crazy, but it is. It's fun. And you know, if you haven't experienced the process, I think everybody needs, you know, everybody should see how these folks, you know, they work for us. You know, we hired them basically when we elected them. They work for us, so they need to, you know, hear the will of the people. And, you know, people are, you know, it could be nerve-wracking. People are afraid of the process. But once you kind of get up there and see that, they really do. If you're a constituent from their district, they will bend over backwards to accommodate you, to mm-hmm. see you, visit with you, and listen to you. And you know, it's a good feeling to get up there and to kind of be treated that way. So, and one other little caveat, after our little rally, which will last an hour, we're going to have a little reception at one of the local breweries. And so we're going to have cocktails and some hors d'oeuvres for folks. So, you know, we're going to make it a little fun. Not too much to where we'll have trouble driving home. We're going to watch it. But we are going to show appreciation for those folks that have taken time out of their very day to come up and support us.
That's good. It's important to have fun, too, while you're working on this stuff. Like you said, we kind of play defense a lot. And there's another statewide group, Conservation Voters New Mexico, that tracks all the bills during the session. And just give a little shout out to them because they work with all the other groups. And as they've said in the, I believe ever since they've been around, and I'm sorry, I'm forgetting how many years that is now, they've defeated all of the bad bills and supported all of the good bills, you know, in terms of environmental legislation, that is. And So we work with them to you know, play defense and offense, really.
They do a great job.
They do a great job.
Yeah, they're really, really professional and you know, in their lobbying, and some of us, you know, nonprofit groups, you know, we're limited to what we can do lobbying-wise, you know, based on our C3 classification.
Right.
But those groups, you know, can go in fully 100%, and, well, they do a great job of representing the conservation community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. And you're a group, too, New Mexico Wildlife Federation. You represent the conservation community. Even for those of us who don't hunt and fish, we have an awful lot in common, as I said earlier. And your centennial, your 100-year anniversary is happening right now, right?
Well, it started, actually, we were founded by Aldo Leopold. I think Everybody in this community probably is familiar with that name.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. Anyway, he's got a school named here, I think, after him,
right? That's
right.
A charter school, public charter school.
By the way, that's a great school. You talk about kids really kind of getting it as far as conservation and public lands. You know, that's a rarity. And that little school, I think, and of course, they have good examples. And they have a great place to learn. And that's one area that we, you know, education is one area we're focusing on. But yes, Aldo Leopold in 1914, it's founded the Game Protection Fund, which then evolved into the New Mexico Wildlife Federation. And we're proud to have that legacy and heritage. I mean,
that's pretty impressive.
Who else can say, you know, what Aldo Leopold? I'm here because of Aldo Leopold.
Right. And what was his purpose and the other people he worked with? What was the purpose in founding the group? What was their mission?
You know, their mission was to actually represent sportsmen on all sportsman-related issues and to kind of be a go-between between sportsmen and the Department of Game and Fish and the Game Commission. And we still fill that role. As fact, we are probably the only group in New Mexico, that holds the Game Commission accountable for their decisions. We're at every Game Commission meeting. We're speaking our piece, and I don't know of any other sportsman's organization in New Mexico that does that. So it was basically formed to represent, you know, sportsmen in New Mexico with the Game Commission in the department. Those folks that decide what we can or can't do and set policy, We're there fighting for New Mexico sportsmen to make sure that our rights are represented and our best interests are represented. So,
and the New Mexico Game Commission is, how do you get to be on the Game Commission?
You are appointed by the governor. And that is a whole nother hot topic. We have issues with that. We think that, and this is just not, you know, one governor. This is governors from both parties have a tendency to appoint folks that maybe have supported them and not necessarily represented the conservation community or even sportsmen. Mm-hmm. So a little favoritism involved. We'd like to see maybe a change in the way that's done. That could be something possibly future legislation down the road. But we think that that process should be tweaked a little bit because we don't think that all the conservation folks are really being fairly representative. And, you know, we all love wildlife, whether you hunt, whether you're a consumptive user or not. Wildlife is important to a lot of people in the state, you know, whether you want to photograph it or just go watch it or if you're hunting it. Mm-hmm. And so everybody should be represented fairly on that commission, you know, regardless of what you like to do and, you know, whether you support a species or not.
And the way it stands right now, because you're a political appointee, you don't necessarily have to have any qualifications to be on the commission, right?
You don't.
There's no requirements like you need to be a biologist or...
You don't even have to hunt mm-hmm. as far as that. I mean, you would think that, you know, everybody would be hunters or at least most of the members of the commission. But no, you don't. And you don't even have to be a biologist. You know, I'm not so sure. I know, you know, everybody on the governor's appointments, I'm sure they're vetted. I'm not even sure ethically wise, you know, what kind of requirements there are. So there's some questions about that process.
Well, in the last couple of minutes that we have left here, John, I'd like to ask you, if listeners are interested in learning anything more about your group, the New Mexico Wildlife Federation, or in getting your newsletter, how they can do that?
Again, you know, go to the website. You know, everything is on nmwildlife.org. Anything you want to know about the organization, you know, our mission, what we do, what we're working on, legislation, staff, is all there. How to contact us if you want to become a member. If you become a member, you'll receive our outdoor reporter that we put out quarterly. You know, we have 16,000 plus members. We're on a big drive and big push to get 100,000 by the end of the year, and it looks like we're going to get there.
Wait, you have 16,000?
16,000 plus now.
60.
16.
Oh, okay.
We may be at 60. I haven't checked in. Like I say, we're trying to grow this thing to 100,000.
That's ambitious.
It's very ambitious. You know what? It's the more voices, the more clout. And
that's right.
You know, and that's how we get things done.
Exactly right. Do you have any last thoughts for us today before we end the show?
I just want to thank you for having me on. You know, again, this public lands issue is extremely important. It's serious to all of us that love our public lands. And please help us at the rally come. And hopefully we'll see you there.
And that's January 21st at 2 p.m. at the Roundhouse.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you, John, for driving to the big metropolis of Silver City to join me on today's show. Thank you to our audio engineer and Kuru Guru, Kyle Johnson. I also want to thank you, our listeners, for tuning into this week's show. You can go to Gila Members Community Radio, look at the Earth Matters page for archives of all the programs, including today's. I'm Donna Stevens. Please join us next week for another edition of Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU at 89.1 FM. This is what community radio looks and sounds like.